Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to another edition of the FantasyGuru.com podcast. And now, here's your host, John Hansen, with Greg Cosell.
Welcome to another edition of the FantasyGuru.com podcast. I am John Hansen. It is Thursday, August 13th, and we're really going to kick off the preseason tonight, and we're going to get it going and see what we see over the next couple of weeks. And before we get to Greg Cosell, we want to remind you, obviously, it's August. It is our time at FantasyGuru.com. I implore all the listeners who are not subscribers to check out FantasyGuru.com. You'll be amazed at all the things that you get, all the apps and all the tools and all the content, and all for one very, very low price of $29.95. So check that out and definitely subscribe. We have a subscriber renewal rate of about 85%, maybe even 88%. So obviously we're doing something right. And by the way, getting tremendous feedback on our content this year. A lot of longtime subscribers are kind of blown away. That's what we do in the preseason. Every year we try and blow people away with all the content. And by the way, one other piece of content that is really getting rave reviews, our stat savant Mike Horn has done an amazing job doing identity articles, all statistically based, and it basically gives you a snapshot of every offensive coordinator and head coach in the National Football League and gives you the skinny in terms of what their identities are in terms of the numbers. So with that plug out of the way, we welcome in our guy, Greg Cosell. What's up, Greg? Good morning.
Good morning, Mr. Hansen. How are you today?
I'm doing very well, Greg, and we're doing the podcast here heading into the first week of the preseason. This won't be a very long one. I say this every time, but listening last week to Joe Dolan, who did an outstanding job, he took a lot of time, and we did that wrap-up of the offseason with you. So
it's only one John Hansen, though, John. There's only one John Hansen. That's what I always say.
That is true. Yeah, of course. but Joe did a heck of a job, and we know Joe.
Yes, he did. Joe.
Yeah, Joe's the man.
He
loves it. So we'll start in the AFC, Greg, and we'll just basically try and cover basically the things that are coming out right now in terms of news and notes and the like. And, of course, we'll start in the AFC East, and, of course, we'll start.
I guess that means the Jets, doesn't it?
Yes. Yes, it does. And you have been a little bit of a Geno Smith fan, and maybe not off the field because that could be an issue, but studying the tape, you liked at times what you've seen from Geno. And I was pumping Geno up this year as a deep sleeper. I know the physical attributes are there. He's got the big, strong, powerful arm. He can move, but he may not get the job back even when he's ready. So talk about, do you see this as a drop-off? Maybe an upside potential, but
well, you know,
Ryan Fitzpatrick,
I think when you're dealing,
go ahead, Greg.
I mean, I was going to say when you're dealing with Chan Gailey, I think you're dealing with a coach who historically has been able to mold much of his philosophy to the quarterbacks that he plays, that he has. I mean, many remember when he had Tyler Thigpen in Kansas City back, whatever year that was, 2007, 2008.
Eight.
And, you know, in some ways, Ryan Fitzpatrick is kind of like that. I mean, you know, so look, is Geno Smith theoretically a far better pocket thrower than Ryan Fitzpatrick? Yes, he is. You know, Fitzpatrick's always been a little erratic. Many would be surprised that Fitzpatrick has probably started about 85 games, if not more, in his NFL career. So you're dealing with an experienced quarterback who has good movement. He's a little scattershot. He can be very streaky, and on those days, as you know, he can be outstanding, but he can also miss receivers. But I would bet that Chan Gailey will take advantage of Fitzpatrick's movement.
Do you see any receiver here benefiting or getting hurt? I mean, for what it's worth, I don't think the kid, the rookie Devin Smith's going to be making any huge plays with the ball traveling 40 yards in the air. So that's one thing. But do you see a Fitzpatrick being good news for a guy like Brandon Marshall who can line up anywhere? Maybe the tight end position. And while we're at it here, any thoughts on Jay Samaro? Because he's playing H-back. He is very athletic. Your thoughts on his role and what he can do in this offense? He's a tough call because the talent is there, but it seems like he's been up and down from day one, and that continues this summer.
Yeah, and look, I think that in an ideal world, since Amaro was a second round pick, and I've always liked Jeff Cumberland and his movement, they could have a nice two tight end set package. All this remains to be seen through camp. You know, Fitzpatrick's a professional quarterback, not a great quarterback, but you know, you're putting a guy out there that has performed at this level, has had good games. You know what he is, but you're not worried about him in the sense that, oh my God, can we run our offense? He can run any offense you want to run. So, you know, if you're talking about a drop off in terms of statistics, which is obviously what you talk about with fantasy, I would say no.
Okay. Let's move on to New England, and we certainly don't want to make a final determination on Tom Brady, but it seems like the deeper we get here, the more likely it is that he'll in fact be suspended for at least those four games. We probably covered it. I'm sure you covered it with Joe. I didn't catch all the podcasts. I caught about 75% of it. But Jimmy Garoppolo, your thoughts on the Patriot offense with Jimmy Garoppolo? You would think that not much of it will change.
Well,
Not
here's what we
really
have
any
no
of.
idea about, John.
Yeah.
What we have no idea about is so much of that offense was built on Brady pre-snap.
Yeah.
That's now you're dealing with a quarterback with no experience.
Right.
So that part has to change. Now, they may still attempt to do it, but the efficiency of it will not be the same. You're talking about Brady. You know, Brady is as good as there's ever been before the snap of the ball, and now you're putting in a guy with no experience. So a major foundation of their offense over the last, oh, many, many years is now different. So it's almost impossible to know exactly what it will look like.
So when Jimmy Garoppolo breaks the huddle, things are defined, and that's the player running, basically, unless he's advanced a lot more than we think.
I mean, you know, the question becomes, will you see a lot less, if it is Garoppolo, will you see a lot less of their selective tempo offense where, you know, because what they used to do is, with Brady is they'd run a play and let's say gain 20 yards and all of a sudden he'd race up to the line of scrimmage because the defense was a little discombobulated. You know, are those kinds of things not going to happen now? You know, that we don't know that. My sense is it's going to be tough to do that with a guy who with no experience.
Yeah, backfield is a real mess. LeGarrette Blount is bringing it as usual. Jonas Gray looking pretty good here in camp, but you've got all these other guys in the mix here, and Brandon Bolden, and of course Travaris Cadet. So boy, that's going to be a difficult situation for fantasy. Moving on to the Buffalo Bills and head coach Rex Ryan. We've learned over the years not to take too much stock in what he says, but he's been talking up LeSean McCoy
A
as a
thousand yards rushing, 1,000 yards receiving, man. I mean, you know, it's going to be one of those years.
And McCoy, boy, he did fall off a little bit in the passing attack, and we'll see about Fred Jackson. He's already banged up, and that could be a bad sign. But do you think at this juncture that LeSean McCoy is capable of putting up those type of numbers and handling that much workload? You know, no running back in the NFL the last 5 years has touched the ball more than LeSean McCoy.
Yeah, look, let's put aside Rex's comment. He's not going to get 1,000 yards receiving. I don't think you've changed all your statistical analysis based on that. He's not going to get 1,000 yards receiving. We know that. That's a hard question to answer. I mean, McCoy is not a big man. They do want to run the ball, no matter who the quarterback turns out to be. If they want to make McCoy their foundation back and have him carry the ball 300 times, boy, that's. Can his body hold up with that, John? I'd be concerned about that. I mean, McCoy's super talented. That's not what we're talking about.
Yeah.
But is McCoy truly a pounded 300 carry back? That's at this point in his career, as you just said, with the last 5 years, that I'd be hard pressed to, answer that in the affirmative.
Yeah, I mean, he's not Frank Gore, and again, this quarterback situation, you would have hoped that Matt Castle would have separated himself at this stage, but that doesn't seem to be happening. And I think a lot of people who cover the Bills feel like all three quarterbacks are going to play this year, and that can't be good for anyone, Greg.
No, and I know that they feel like they have a great team, and they certainly have a lot of strength in a lot of areas, but they're going to have to pick a quarterback, John. I'm just telling you from experience, and I
Yeah.
think anybody will tell you this. We know they don't have a great quarterback. They know that, but you still have to pick one, and you can't take him out if he has a bad first quarter week one. You can't do that. You got to pick a quarterback that you think gives you the best chance to play the way you want to play. Now, it doesn't matter whether you and I agree with that choice, but you got to pick one, and then you got to let him play.
In Miami, Ryan Tannehill, Greg, I talk with Omar Kelly, who is a beat writer, dialed in down there, and he told me that Tannehill's performance on the deep ball, the ball placement and the like, has literally increased 100% in training camp here. So
I'm not surprised, John, because it's not an arm strength issue. The guy can throw a ball. You know, whatever the issue was, you know, I can't answer that, but I'm not surprised that he's improved. I think Ryan Tannehill, we've had this conversation many times, is just one of those guys that all of a sudden in 3 years we're going to say, wow, he's a top 10 quarterback. And without almost even realizing that he became a top 10 quarterback.
A lot of new weapons here. Devontae Parker is still on the shelf. Greg Jennings likely going to start for him for a little while. Kenny Stills a little bit banged up as well. Not exactly opening eyes. I was also told that Jordan Cameron has been a little underwhelming. Some good work in the red zone. And all these guys are new to the team. So I go back to Mr. Jarvis Landry. And I know you like him, Greg. But one other thought. 9 yards a catch scares a lot of people off. Doesn't scare me off all that much in terms of fantasy point per reception leagues. Because, look, Wes Welker was a stud, averaging like 10.5 yards a catch. But, again, I did think that Jarvis Landry was a little more explosive and a lot more explosive than this 9 yards a catch would indicate. And
well,
he's
that was his rookie season. Yeah. I mean, that's hard to know, but I would bet he'll do better. Now, he's obviously not an outside vertical guy. We're not going to jump to 15, but you could be a dynamic slot guy. And like you say, average 11.2. I mean, that's what a lot of these slot guys do in the NFL now.
Yeah. Well, they are using him a little bit more down the field. But again, just the point is, do you notice it on tape that, I mean, this guy is not slow? Yeah.
No, not by any means.
I think he moves pretty well.
And he's strong, and he has good run after catch. That number will go up this year. How much, who can say, but it'll go up.
Tennessee Titans, as we move on here to the AFC South. And not a great camp, not a great camp for David Cobb. And look, he is a rookie. It's his first training camp and all that, and it's a very, very long season. But would that concern you if Cobb is not a factor in September for Marcus Mariota? Because now we're looking at Bishop Sankey, and from all reports, he's had a good camp. But how important do you think a sizable first and second down sustainer like Cobb will be for Mariota's success in year one?
Well, this is where I think the preseason games will be fascinating, John, and it starts this weekend for Tennessee. I don't think they play tonight. I think they play over the weekend. I'm very anxious to see, number one, how many snaps they play Mariota starting, you know, the first weekend, and what they do with him. Are they going to put him under center a decent amount, in which case a back becomes important, or are they going to put him in the gun? I don't know, you know, what they're going to do. I don't think anybody knows what they're going to do. As we've discussed, they draft a fullback in the fourth round and Cobb in the fifth round. So it leads you to believe that they want to put Mariota under center a meaningful number of snaps. But I think the preseason is going to tell us an awful lot.
They also do have a fairly interesting group of receivers that would lead you to believe that, well, maybe they are going to spread it out a little bit. Kendall Wright doing well. Just saw a report today that Sean Jefferson, the wide receiver coach, is expecting good things from Justin Hunter, believe it or not. They still have Harry Douglas, who's penciled in as a starter, and Doriel Green-Beckham. And, of course, Akeem Nick's still here. Anything jump out here in terms of this receiving core? We all know that Doriel Green-Beckham is ultra-talented, but he's a little rough around the edges. I still, of course, revert to Kendall Wright as likely the go-to guy.
You know, they've got you hit it right on the head. They've got a really interesting group of receivers. I've read about Justin Hunter, who I always liked. They say he, you know, maybe the light's gone on a little bit. He's talented. You know, with Hunter and Doriel Green-Beckham, who, again, he's a rookie, and it's always hard with rookies, but now you're dealing with, you know, a 6'4 guy in Hunter who can run, a 6'5 guy in Beckham who can run. They have a very interesting group of receivers. They may take a little while, and you have a new quarterback, obviously, but they'll be a fascinating offense to watch evolve as the year progresses.
Blake Bortles has reportedly shortened his release, and they're working mechanically on him, and we all know what happened last year. Things kind of unraveled. The hope is that the O-line plus the addition of TJ Yeldon can take the needed pressure off of him, and they've got Julius Thomas. So on paper, Greg, it all looks good. I want to talk about Allen Hurns, though. He kind of surprised people, and he was familiar with Jed Fish's offense, so he had a little bit of an advantage last year. Jed Fish is now gone, but you know, with Marquise Lee, I know he wants to play in the preseason, but this guy just can't stay healthy. It looks like it looks like Allen Hurns is likely going to start over Lee. But if Lee were 100%, isn't he the better option there from the Z receiver spot? I just like Lee as a compliment. I like how Lee and Robinson may complement one another. I'm not sure that Hurns will complement Allen Robinson quite like a Lee could.
Well, Lee's more talented than Hurns. He's more complete if he can get on the field. Hurns is straight line vertical and obviously did very well as a rookie. Robinson is your short intermediate guy with really good hands, with great run after catch, kind of a quarterback's best friend type receiver. Hurns fits that, you know, fits being able to play opposite Robinson. But they drafted Marquise Lee in the first round because he's dynamic. He's essentially a multi-dimensional receiver, but you can't do that if you're not on the field, John.
Yeah, that's a problem, so we'll see about
that. That's a problem. So now it's second year having a tough time getting on the field.
Yeah. He did show a couple of flashes late last year, but of course now we've got a new offense. Let's talk Indianapolis Colts, because I have got a big-time man crush, Greg, in terms of fantasy, on one Frank Gore. And because I know he's 32, but I just can't get out of my head Frank Gore. Now, granted, we know the O-line isn't great there. Although, I will say that I actually think that their depth is very good on the offensive line. Maybe it's a cast of mediocre guys, but they've got a lot of options. And, you know, if they have injuries, they may be okay. But I just can't get past my mind Frank Gore running against these light boxes that you're going to face off in this offense with Andrew Luck and all the vertical threats. And I think, Greg, they've been working on the deep ball. That's going to help Gore. And I see receptions. I Andrew Luck checks it down. Gore can really catch it well, as well, I think, as Ahmad Bradshaw, who had 7 touchdowns last year receiving, Greg. So,
well, Gore's a complete player, John. I mean, that's a great signing for them, because he's not going to be asked to carry an offense, and he still ran very well last year. So I think it's a great fit for Gore. And they, by the way, I don't know if you saw, they signed T.Y. Hilton to a 6-year deal. So, you know, he's going to be there.
Amazing. It's unbelievable. But do you agree with the notion that Frank Gore has a chance to be incredibly efficient with his touches this year and also put up huge numbers in this spot right here?
Yeah, I do. I mean, he could carry 220 times, you know, which is not a lot for a so-called lead back. But I think this is a multi-dimensional offense. You know, this was a team I've really studied on film the last 3 years because of Andrew Luck. And they're very, very multidimensional from a personnel standpoint, from a formation standpoint. They'll line up with 2 tights, 3 tights, 2 wide, 3 wide. Yeah, I mean, they do everything. And you know, Luck can handle everything, obviously, and they've got the talent to be able to do everything. And Gore, you know, he's a very good blocker. He's a very good receiver. We know what he is as a runner. You know, Gore can fit in any kind of scheme you want to put him in.
Speaking of being multidimensional, there's a little snippet that came out earlier this week that Andre Johnson will be on something of a pitch count. Does that make sense to you? Because maybe when they go too tight, maybe Andre Johnson's actually not on the field, and they sure seem to want to get Philip Dorsett on the field as well. And that's T.Y., that's Dorsett. Your
Dante
thoughts?
Dante Moncrief is a guy, don't forget about. That kid is really talented.
Greg, how disgustingly loaded are they at receiver? I mean, this is unbelievable.
And they've got everything you want. They got Johnson, who's now a possession guy at 6'3", 230. They got Moncrief at 6'2", 226, who can really run, but he's got great size. They've got, you know, Hilton, he's small, but he essentially can fill multiple roles. And they've got Philip Dorsett, who plays to his 40 time. I mean, watching him in Miami, he just ran by people like they weren't there. So, I mean, they've got every dimension you want, a receiver, plus a lot of good, I mean, they've got Fleener and Dwayne Allen at tight end.
They're devastating down the field now, Greg. And now you've got a Hall of Famer as your move the chains guy, you know, plus a guy like Dwayne Allen and Gore. So it's just amazing. I think that some people are overrating Andre Johnson. Again, I understand he's Andre Johnson, but I only have him, Greg. Let me give you the numbers and see if you think that they make sense. I've got him with...
Can I guess?
Go ahead, guess.
54 for 750 yards.
Oh, my God. That's really low. You're serious?
I don't know. I'm just,
No, I mean, that's a low number, Greg. What do you have? Well, I have 78 catches for 995.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I mean, and that's right. About, 12 and a half yards a catch?
You could be right. What I don't know is how much, they're going to, what the combination of receivers will be. That's what we don't know.
Yeah, yeah. So
I don't think they're taking T.Y. Hilton off the field very often.
I know. So look, I'm going to probably move him down a little bit here.
I was working off what you said about you don't have him as high as some, but I'm also a big Dante Moncrief fan, and I think it's going to be hard to keep him off the field.
Right. Yeah. So we'll see. I only have Andre Johnson at 28 at wide receiver in a point per reception league. So I think most have him a lot higher. Let's go to Houston. I know you talked with Joe about the Arian Foster situation, but boy, it's clear that they're in big trouble, Greg. Big trouble, because Foster was going to be obviously the foundation, if not their main hope offensively. So he's
the bell cow. The bell cow, as we say, John.
Major foundation. Major, which is rare in 2015. But that's what he was last year. I mean, they wrote him into the ground. I had a whole conversation, for what it's worth, with Maurice Jones-Drew on the radio. I actually predicted Arian Foster would get injured quickly because they just ran him into the ground last year. And I thought he was fresh last year because this half the season the year before. But we'll see when he can return. But Alfred Blue, we know, looks the part, but only averaged 3.1 yards a carry and didn't overly impress there and probably needs massive volume. But just how disruptive is this, though? Let's assume there's a poor running attack behind the quarterback, whoever that is, the poor quarterback. Well, this is a deal breaker for me.
That's a big issue because they're going to, whoever it is, Mallett or Hoyer, and I don't know if you got a chance to see the first Hard Knocks, but obviously they haven't made that decision yet, and my guess is it's going to be a while before they make that decision. They're going to need to run the ball consistently as their offensive foundation. And, again, now your back is a question, and we don't know the answer to that. I mean, is it Alfred Blue? Is it Jonathan Grimes? Are they going to try to mix and match? It's hard to really have a run game foundation when you're mixing and matching.
You offset a little bit of this by actually getting the tight end involved in this offense. Garrett Graham supposedly having a pretty good training camp. I haven't heard anything about CJ Fedorowicz, but geez, if you're Bill O'Brien and you don't get the tight ends involved this year, I guess you should just eliminate the position from your mental Rolodex.
Well, I think he'd like to get them involved. I think that it's, that's a wait and see, obviously, but I think he'd clearly like them to be involved.
Let's move on here, and we'll go to the AFC North, Baltimore Ravens. I'm sure we discussed this on the podcast, but just your thoughts on Joe Flacco working in basically a new number one wide receiver who's missed time and also a new rookie tight end. I know that Crockett Gilmore could officially start, but Max Williams is obviously going to be asked to do a lot this year. I know Flacco doesn't care. I mean, he's like a robot out there. Nothing affects him. But to me, Greg, right, it's a lot of Steve Smith early and a lot of checkdowns to Justin Forsett early on in Baltimore.
Could be. I mean, Flacco's still going to try to get it down the field. It's hard to know with rookies. And of course, you're talking about Breshad Perriman and Max Williams. So it's hard to know. But I think Flacco is uniquely equipped to handle this. Nothing seems to faze him. He'll just run the plays, and he'll do what he always does.
Cincinnati, Jeremy Hill, I don't know if we've talked a lot about him, but I'm very high on Jeremy Hill. I like the pedigree. I like the showing last year, obviously. I love the offensive line. So even with Giovanni Bernard in the mix, I'm going to go all in on Jeremy Hill as an early pick in fantasy. Your thoughts on Jeremy Hill becoming quickly one of those, I don't want to use the word elite, but right there on the cusp already, 5.1 yards a carry in his rookie year, and we know he can catch the football. I'm very high on Jeremy Hill.
I would agree with you because I think their offense will run through Jeremy Hill. So I think you're going to see a relative continuation of how they ended the season, what with the last four or five games, John, you know, where Hill clearly became the lead back. I think they have to play that way. And I think they'll work in Giovanni Bernard as kind of a satellite player, almost like a Reggie Bush was used at times throughout his career. And they'll get Bernard in the game in certain packages and still try to get him on the field 25 times. But I think this offense runs through Jeremy Hill.
And when you look at the receiving corps, they're a little upset lately with Marvin Jones, who's been injured a lot, dealing with a hamstring this year. And Mohamed Sanu, just, boy, I thought he was one of the more impressive players in the league the first 7-8 weeks, and then he just completely disappeared and fell off a cliff. So clearly, Greg, I think it's all there for Tyler Eifert to have a breakout season. Granted, we haven't seen much from him, but I know you like him.
I do.
Do you think that Tyler Eifert has a chance to settle in quickly as basically Andy Dalton's number two option in the passing game?
That would make sense to me, John. You know, obviously we know who the number one option is. And, you know, I think Sanu is a good player, but he's ultimately at his best as probably a number three working inside with his size and strength and hands. So I think Eifert could fill that role as a guy. I mean, they drafted him with, I think – was he a first-round pick or a second-round pick?
No, he was a first-round pick.
He was a first-round pick, yeah. And I liked Eifert coming in. I thought he was the best tight end prospect that year that he came out. And you know, he's shown some flashes. I mean, the plays he made when he was healthy as a rookie were pretty impressive. So, yes, I would look for Eifert to really emerge.
In Pittsburgh, Marcus Wheaton, still have to see him track the deep ball. I haven't seen that yet, but he has had a good offseason. And your thoughts on when the Steelers – where would you like ideally have all these guys line up? Would it, to you, ideally be Wheaton on the field in a three wide receiver set in the slot with Brian Martavis Bryant on the outside and Antonio Brown in his normal spot? Is that the ideal lining up location of these three wide receivers to you?
Well, they're going to be multiple like the Colts. Yeah. I mean, you know, ultimately if they go three wide, you know, I think they can all line up anywhere depending on what they want to do. You know, that's the nice thing about it. I mean, Antonio Brown is as good a moving piece as there is in the league. And you could argue easily, I mean, you know, he's a certain kind of receiver, but for what he is, you could argue he's a top 2-3 receiver in the league. I mean, you know, he doesn't have the big size and strength that, let's say, of a Dez Bryant or those guys. But I mean, Antonio Brown, there's no one quicker in the NFL coming out of breaks than Antonio Brown. So, you know, they can do a lot of things with their three wide receivers. They can line up anywhere, but they'll be like Indianapolis. You're going to see two tight, and you're going to see three wide. You know, you're going to see a lot of different things from a really multidimensional offense.
Over on the west side, we've got the Denver Broncos, and not a lot going on here, quite frankly, but we're hearing the reports that Peyton Manning's his arm is stronger. I know you had a little bit of a theory, I believe it was you, in terms of understanding what happened last year to Peyton. It may have been you, maybe it was somebody else I was talking to, but the theory was that, yes, he was also a little bit banged up, but the big problem was that he simply couldn't practice like he normally does, and he's the ultimate rep guy. And okay, so your thoughts on Peyton in this Kubiak offense? We've probably asked you this before, but I would imagine that Peyton Manning will do a lot of the things that he normally does no matter what, like throw it in the red zone, even though Kubiak likes to run it in the red zone. Basically, your thoughts on Peyton this year?
Well, I think you'll see him under center more.
Yeah.
I think you'll see Kubiak's offense as opposed to Peyton's offense. I think you'll see them selectively go tempo and Peyton in the gun. But I think other than that, you're going to see a lot more of Peyton under center. You're going to see more of sort of the way he played back in, let's say, 2004, 2005 when he had Edgerrin James and they did a lot of the stretch run action, the play action off of that. I think you're going to see far more of that than you're going to see Peyton in the gun.
Boy, but don't you think, though, that Peyton is just going to check out of the run in the red zone and continue to sling it a little bit? Because that used to be a bone of contention. Maybe that's an example of why Andre Johnson hasn't scored a lot of touchdowns, because Kubiak loves to run it in the red zone.
Yeah, I mean, you know, That's a tough thing to know. I mean, yeah. You know, Peyton, say what you want about Peyton. He's a very smart guy. I think he's very self-aware. I think he knows what he can and can't do. And, yes, is he prideful? Of course he is. That's why he's, you know, reached the level he's reached. But I just think overall, John, you're going to see a little different offense.
Yeah, and your confidence level in C.J. Anderson to be that bell cow in this – in this game, because Kubiak tends to lean on one back, you know, Monty Ball.
Yeah, I
still
think
there.
That's going to be interesting. I mean, you know, there's no questioning what C.J. Anderson did last year, and I guess reports are that he's the guy right now. I've always believed Monty Ball was talented. Now, it's being a lead back in the NFL goes beyond talent, and I don't know Ball personally, so I can't speak to that. But I think he's a really gifted runner, so I'm anxious to see how that plays out.
Talked to somebody yesterday who covers Kansas City, and the person told me that they're legit trying to push that ball down the field. They're working hard on that in practice. But how difficult, I mean, how do you envision that work playing out during the regular season once the bullets are flying for real? Jeremy Maclin, we know, is going to help that cause, but I'm not feeling it just yet with Alex Smith throwing it 30-plus yards down the field.
Well, you know, again, I think what you're dealing with is you know, last year, and when you watch the film, you see this, and how many times have I said to you that there's no statistic for balls that should be thrown that aren't thrown?
Yeah.
So, I mean, you know, that's the issue you face with Alex Smith, is they set up some things for him last year and he didn't turn it loose. They're going to continue to try to do that, and I'm sure they've worked with him this offseason. Now you're getting into a guy's head, and that we can't answer that question, John. You know, they're going to design plays. Andy Reid's good at that. They're going to design plays where it's there. They were there last year. He didn't turn it loose. He has to be the one to turn it loose.
You know, it's an interesting group of skill players, though. Andy Reid, he'll spread it around, but we all love Kelsey. We all know what Jeremy Maclin can do. We've talked a lot to you about Albert Wilson, who's doing well in camp and should likely start. You'd like him as a lowercase Brandon Cooks. But DeAnthony Thomas, 2 years in a row now, is just going off in training camp and making defenders look bad. And he's going to be a factor, Greg, in the slot. Now, for fantasy, I probably would avoid him, but as a group, this is a pretty dynamic receiving core and weaponry for Alex Smith and Andy Reid.
Without question. They've gone from literally nothing to having a very intriguing group because, look, Kelsey is really gifted. Now, obviously, they want him to continue to improve. I thought he was actually good last year, Kelsey. You know, again, I'm not talking about fantasy numbers. I'm talking about watching him on film. We know Maclin, you know, provide some juice. I really was very intrigued with Albert Wilson coming out of Georgia State, and I thought he was a lowercase Brandon Cooks, and I thought he showed some of that ability last year later in the season.
Listening to the FantasyGuru.com podcast, I'm John Hansen along with Greg Cosell. Check out FantasyGuru.com if you have never subscribed to the site, and you'll be amazed at everything that you get. Obviously, this is our big time of the year. In the AFC West, I don't really have all that much in terms of the Oakland Raiders and the San Diego Chargers, Greg. I'm going to spare you Latavius Murray talk because I know I've asked you about him on this podcast 16
times. Yeah, and there's
nothing
to say. I mean, you know, again, we haven't played yet. He's going to be the feature back unless something happens.
Well, yeah, he's got to stay healthy. That's everything. That's all of it because if he does,
I can't predict what he's going to do. I mean, you know, no one can reasonably predict what he's going to do.
I feel strongly that he's going to do well from a fantasy perspective, at least if
right.
He's on the field and healthy, but that's what I don't know. Can he hold up? That's the real question.
Right.
Cause if he does, I'm telling you right now, he's going to put up big numbers. San Diego, Melvin Gordon, we've covered him. He's not doing all that well in terms of blocking, which surprises no one at fantasyguru.com. So we'll move on. I know Joe talked to you about Stevie Johnson last week on the podcast. We'll move over to the NFC, and we'll start in the NFC East. And, boy, it's interesting with Sam Bradford, Greg. He's, from all reports, hasn't been limited, and he's looked very good. But I will say this, Sam Bradford strikes me as the type of guy who always probably looks outstanding in practice. He's got to pass some tests in the preseason games, even though he's going up against vanilla defenses. That's what it's all about to me, Greg, with Bradford.
Yeah, well, and to me, just to add one point to that, to me, what I'll be looking for, and we'll see if it even happens in the preseason, John, is I want to see Bradford when there's people around him.
Yeah.
Because I think when he played in St. Louis, because he played behind a bad old line, he got a little, you know, cabin fever, as we say. He started to perceive pressure. Now, Chip Kelly's offense can take care of a lot of that because it's quick tempo, ball comes out. But it's still going to be third and nine sometimes. And, you know, we may not see that in the preseason. You're right about Bradford. He's a great thrower. I mean, he's probably a top five or six thrower in the league if you just talk about the way the ball comes out with velocity and accuracy. But that was never a question. There's other questions that we've just discussed.
What about Zach Ertz in year three? Is he going to see the field enough to truly have a breakout, or will it be more of the same with Zach Ertz in terms of playing second fiddle at times to Brent Celek, who gets more snaps? And I know Chip loves him as a blocker, and he's going to continue to be a frustrating guy who's hard to count on a week-to-week basis. I mean, any thoughts there? I know it's early here still in the preseason. We haven't seen a game yet.
Well, the only thing I'd say, and it's impossible to know exactly with Chip, as you know, as we all know, but, you know, they signed two really good backs in DeMarco Murray and Ryan Matthews. And Chip, contrary to a lot of people's beliefs, wants to run the ball. And, you know, I think that's going to be the starting point for this offense. So, you know, I don't know. I don't know how Zach Ertz fits in terms of fantasy numbers. You know, he's talented. I think there'll be games where they find some matchups for him, but I don't think he's going to be a weekly seven catch guy, John. I don't believe that's going to happen within the context of their offense.
You know who may, though, is Jordan Matthews, Greg, who's had a very good training camp, and Josh Huff is making some noise. You can address him, and we all know about Aguilar, who could be a little slow off the mark in terms of eased into a prominent role. But Greg, it seems like Jordan Matthews is going to be, if there's any foundation player in the passing attack, it's got to be Matthews.
You would think. You know, to me, this is very much a schemed pass game. And I think Matthews thrives in that because I think he needs the scheme to help him. So, yeah, I mean, based on what happened last year over the last half of the season, there's no reason to believe Matthews won't put up big numbers.
The New York Giants are using all three running backs here, and that seems like a pretty wise thing to do because of Rashad Jennings and his durability issues. I've actually been told that Mr. Andre Williams, Greg, is catching the ball out of the backfield in training camp here. So it looks like it's going to be a three-headed monster with Rashad Jennings, Shane Vereen, and also Andre Williams. Greg, as a trio, that's pretty good.
Yeah, and Vereen gives you an awful lot, you know, because of his movement ability. He can line up anywhere and create matchups. So, yeah, their backfield, you know, while not one guy is technically, you know, sort of a foundation back, I think when all said and done, Ben McAdoo, you know, he's got a pretty multidimensional sort of West Coast base type offense, and I don't think they feel like they need a back to carry 280 times for their offense to work.
I kind of like the addition of James Jones, if for no other reason than to have a veteran presence. He's a capable body for sure. I mean, I hate to call him a body. He's not like a carcass, but he played for McAdoo. You know, he played for McAdoo. That's a real nice depth receiver.
Yeah, and you know, look, you know, he wasn't brought in to be a number one or number two or even maybe a number three, but I think he's one of those guys that is going to be a factor in their season.
Yeah, very loaded offensively. Over in Washington, Greg, it's not looking great for RG3 thus far. I don't think he's shown a ton of promise here. And also, Kirk Cousins and Colt McCoy have not had good camps here. So I don't know where we go with the Washington Redskins. DeSean Jackson.
Let me ask you this as we speak today on August 13th. Do you think RG3 will start 16 games for the Redskins this year?
No. No, I've given up. I really have. And yeah, it's amazing because you look at the numbers, 68.7 completion percentage. If you showed me this time last year, just those two numbers for RG3, and they just told me RG3 completed 68.7% of his passes and averaged 7.9 yards an attempt and said, oh, he's back. But no, he was terrible. I know he did show some signs of life here, but I don't know where we're going to go here.
Joe and I went over this pretty thoroughly last week on RG3. I don't know if there's any more to add.
No, there isn't. There isn't. So we'll move on and we'll talk Dallas Cowboys and not much going on here. We've talked about Joseph Randle. I think Darren McFadden stinks. Go ahead,
Greg. What's your feeling about their run game here, John? I mean, you know, we've said 1,000 times what Murray did last year was pretty special. No matter what you think of him as a runner, what he did last year was really special. I just don't believe their offense is going to be the same.
They're going to have to piecemeal it together. Last summer, they were talking about Lance Dunbar as an active complement, and then Murray just dominated the entire backfield. He's gone, so I actually do think that Lance Dunbar, and look, can he stay healthy? That's a big question. I think Lance Dunbar is going to have to shoulder 100-plus touches at least, probably 125 touches. I do like Joseph Randle, but big-time unproven. You know, we just don't know if he can hold up.
You don't know.
So I like him, though, as a talent, and the O-line we all know is amazing. But the real thing here is, to me, is Tony Romo threw it 473 times last year. He's not throwing it
473. Yeah, the fewest by far in his career. He's going to have to throw it more this year.
Yes. 435 attempts in 15 games, down 100 from 2013 in 15 games. I'm thinking, Greg, it's going to rise by about 125 passing attempts. That's significant. And I think that 40% of those are going to Jason Witten. So I think that Jason Witten is very undervalued in fantasy. He doesn't score a lot of touchdowns and all that.
I would agree with you, John. I think Witten's going to be a major factor in this offense.
I think he's going to get 80 grabs, which would be the highest he's had in a couple of years. And, you know, they just don't have much else. And I don't understand Terrence Williams, because I thought Terrence Williams coming out of Baylor was a pretty talented kid. He caught a ton of balls, downfield playmaker and all that, and run after the catch. But how does Terrence Williams start all 16 games, Greg, and only catch 37 balls? I mean, how is that possible?
Well, I don't have an answer for that. I mean, clearly Brian and Witten are the two main guys. You know, that's just, you know, I mean, in some ways he's kind of their version of, you know, Alvin Harper when it was Michael Irvin and Alvin Harper. I mean, you know, Terrence Williams might catch some more balls, but he's not catching 75.
Right. He will catch more balls just like Witten. But I guess the point is, why isn't Terrence Williams utilized – In a variety of ways? I mean, he's just not a complete player.
I think you hit it right on the head. I think when he came out, he was seen as kind of a straight line vertical guy who runs a limited route tree. And while he's got talent in the things he does well, when you put him on the field with Dez Bryant, who's arguably the best receiver in the league in terms of completeness, and Jason Witten, who's phenomenal. You know, sometimes people forget about Jason Witten. He's phenomenal. You know, he's really the third option. And that's kind of the way it goes. And I don't see that changing this year, to be honest with you.
Yeah, I guess in retrospect, I think it was a second round pick.
Then you're dealing with a guy like Cole Beasley, who may not put up big numbers, but Cole Beasley is a really good third down player. You're almost looking at Williams on third down as then becoming the fourth guy.
And really, Greg, if Joseph Randle doesn't come through, Romo, they're gonna be a completely different offense, Greg. It's gonna be all on Romo.
Totally, and that's a different offense.
And that's a little bit of a problem.
I think, you know, you read stuff like I read stuff, John. It's getting to be that time. I don't see a lot of people talking about the Cowboys. You know, all anybody says about the Cowboys is they have a great O line, but I don't think they're gonna be able to play the same way they played last year.
Yes, no, and. While I do like Randle, I'm giving him a chance. I'm probably willing to take a chance on him in fantasy in the fifth round because of the upside. I love Witten this year as a value. I like a lot of old guys this year, Greg. It's weird. Witten and Marcus Colston and even Vernon Davis, but we'll move on.
That's because we're getting old, John. We like the old guys.
That is true. I love Adam Vinatieri. He's my favorite player in the league. Let's go to the North. And again, not a ton going on here, but I don't know if you saw the Hall of Fame game, but I liked that first drive. I thought it was, granted, it means nothing, but I just liked Teddy getting the ball to Johnson, Wallace, Wright, Rudolph. I thought that their weapons were on full display on that one drive.
Did you notice the kind of throws? I mean, I think Norv Turner understands his quarterback so well, and Norv is one of the best in the league, and that is known to everyone. I think he understands Teddy so well. Did you notice those throws? They were all short throws.
Yes.
That's what Teddy Bridgewater is. He's going to be an efficient player. He's not going to be a guy driving the ball down the field. I mean, they'll take their shots like every team, but Bridgewater will be an efficient, sustaining type quarterback, and then you add Adrian Peterson to the mix, and they should have one of those kinds of offenses. It won't necessarily be a big play offense. It's, you know, run after catch will be a factor, and they'll take some shots to Wallace, no question, but that's what their offense is going to be.
Might Kyle Rudolph actually be 1A in the passing game in terms of the options at worst?
I mean, if assuming he stays – look, there was never a question about his ability as a tight end. If he can stay healthy, I think with the kind of quarterback Bridgewater is, John, Rudolph could really be a big factor in this pass game.
I'm going to go back to that well one more time, and I know he's killed a lot of hopes and dreams, but – I got to do it. You know, it doesn't matter what happens. Like last summer, I was right to back Rudolph. It didn't happen, but my reasoning was right. I'm going back. I'm going back there. One other thought. I do like Jerick McKinnon. I understand maybe efficiency-wise, he wasn't very good in the passing attack, but you see that little dump-off pass and that move he made. Adrian Peterson, I don't think, is doing that. I just think that Jerick McKinnon is a real interesting
– You know, and they could take, they could take Peterson out, and in obvious passing downs, he is over 30 now, and bring in McKinnon. That I could easily see them doing that.
Yeah, don't you think McKinnon is pretty natural and smooth receiver out of the backfield?
Well, he's a really gifted athlete. I mean, he was an option quarterback in college.
Exactly. So we move on. Not a ton here. Detroit. Ebron, we've talked about him just over and over again, and I think the real story here is Jorick Bell is feeling better, but Amir Abdullah is lighting it up here. So it sure
looks
like
Amir Abdullah.
You know, and I think we talked about this on the radio. We did a poll about Matthew Stafford, and most of our readers expect a bounce back year from him. He's a tough call, but the talent is there. It's year two of the offense. The weaponry is really impressive here, Greg. I think that this line offense is kind of laying in the weeds right now. No one's really talking about them, but there's a lot to work with here in year two of Joe Lombardi's offense. And I think Joe Lombardi himself admitted that maybe he gave them a little bit too much of the offense last year, and things are way better this year. Everyone is much more comfortable.
Second year in a new system. Great point. They'd obviously expect Ebron, who's really gifted, to take major steps up. Abdullah, I mean, I thought Abdullah was the second best runner overall in this draft, so I'm not surprised by what I've heard so far. It's early, of course, and, you know, I don't get excited by the first 2-3 weeks of training camp, but, I really liked Abdullah, the player, on tape.
Jay Cutler's at it again, doing well, and creating positive momentum in the preseason. We all know that can change quickly, but things are going fairly well. And
they're going to manage Cutler, though. This is John Fox now. This is John Fox coming to Carolina in 2002, running the ball, trying to play defense, and minimizing the impact of your quarterback. That's the way they're going to play.
Then again, unless Vic Fangio is just the greatest defensive coordinator of all time and gets this defense playing very well, the defense isn't very good overall. So he may have to sling it a little bit. And then when the bullets are flying for real, the Jay Cutler tends to come out. So we'll see. I know you talked with Joe about Eddie Royal last week. He's doing really well and looks like he's going to have a very prominent role here because Kevin White, I don't think they can rely on him early on. You've got Jeffrey and Bennett and Royal as the top weapons, not to mention Matty Forte. And we'll move on. Green Bay, not much going on here. I mean, I don't really have much. I know Joe asked you about Richard Rodgers last week, but your thoughts on what is the upside of a Richard Rodgers? Let's go there. Let's assume he entrenches himself as the the number one. We know they have Davante Adams that they like, and of course the two other guys in Lacy. What is the upside of a Richard Rodgers in this offense here in year two? We're talking 50 catches, maybe 60 catches, or
I would look back to what JerMichael Finley did in those 2-3 years where he was a big factor. I mean, I think, you know, he didn't catch 80 or 85, if memory serves me correctly, did he, John?
No. Well, he got hurt.
I think he was kind of in a 65, you know, range. I would bet because they have so many weapons, and I would expect Davante Adams to take a big step forward this year. So they've got three really pretty big-time wideouts. So I would expect Rodgers, you know, again, I don't think they run an offense where they sort of have a number one per se. Like, they don't force the ball to anybody. But I would think Rodgers, from a fantasy standpoint, you know, even – what's he, if he could catch 55 balls? I mean, you know, I don't know what you have for him this year, but he's not catching 85 balls.
Yeah, it's a fluid situation in terms of the projection. It's all about yep. what his role is. Right now, I do have him with 48 grabs, though, for 555, 4 to 5 touchdowns there as a high-end number two tight end in the world of fantasy. Move on here, and we move over to the NFC South. And not much going on here. Also in Atlanta, I don't really have much when you've got these two backs, Devonta Freeman and Tevin Coleman, a little bit banged up, and Julio Jones and Roddy White. That's about it. We're not hearing a lot from the kid Justin Hardy. It's Leonard Hankerson making some noise there.
And yeah, we discussed. Yeah, Joe and I went over that last week, and you know, again, right. I'm anxious to see how that plays out. You know, look, Hankerson's been in the league a little bit, and he's, you know, bounced around. He's a long, lanky kid. He can run in a straight line. You know, I guess he was, I believe, a third-round pick. So, you know, he's one of those guys. Maybe he's a late bloomer. But I think the run game here is so critical. They've not been able to run the ball with any consistency the last couple of years, and that has really derailed their offense at critical points.
Carolina, not hearing great things about Devin Funchess. It's been kind of quiet, so if he's not going to be a factor, we're basically looking at the same receiver group and the same offense as last year. And that's not a tragedy, but I kind of view Funchess as a pretty big key in terms of if Cam's going to take a step forward and put up better numbers throwing the football, I feel like Funchess is a critical part of that. I know he likes Teddy Ginn, and I know he likes Philly Brown a little bit, and Cotchery's still there, but I think Funchess, well, I mean, he's a second-round pick. You know, I liked the pairing of Funchess and Kelvin Benjamin, but so far Funchess is not exactly lit it up, but it's still early, Greg. Your thoughts on Funchess?
Yeah, I didn't love him coming out, John. So, I mean, for me, I thought, you know, again, I don't do rounds of players in the draft, but I would have thought second round was a bit high if I had to really do that. You know, the player who I kind of liked in rewatching a good amount of Cam Newton this summer was I kind of like Corey Brown. Yeah. You know, again, I don't know what that means numbers-wise because I don't think they're a big passing team to begin with. I mean, I don't think you're going to see Cam throwing 35 touchdowns or anything. You know, I think what he's done the last couple of years is likely what he'll be, you know, 23, 24 touchdowns kind of thing. You know, so I can't speak to Corey Brown's numbers, but he's got some vertical speed, some vertical explosion. He, you know, I know they brought Ginn back, and he fills that role when he's on the field, but I think Brown's a little more complete.
But they take their shots, Greg, every week.
Yeah, they do, for sure.
And those are the guys. So they've got a decent duo there in terms of deep threats here. Over in New Orleans, you know, our guy Lance Zierlein, I know you know Lance. He's an yep. O-line analyst, if you will. And, you know, he had the article that he wrote for fantasyguru.com, he had got a hold of some great metrics, and there were outstanding data on the Saint O-line, which surprised me a little bit because I thought that they were a little weaker up the gut last year, but that's been addressed by Max Unger. Greg, I'm thinking that this O-line might be outstanding, and that's why we bumped up Mark Ingram and CJ Spiller. Your thoughts on this offense? Everyone's talking about them running the football more. Yeah, they're gonna stay very committed to the run. I'm not so sure it's gonna be Marty ball all of a sudden, but I really like the Saint running attack this year with this O-line.
Yeah, you know, again, you get into a situation, though, of how they're going to play as a team. I think that if their defense can play much, much better, and last year they struggled, obviously, then I think you would see Sean Payton stick with the run game. But if they get into these games where he gets a feeling that it's going to take 24, 27, 30 points to win, then I think he's going to go, you know, throw the ball. So I think much of their run game is going to be dependent on how their defense plays, believe it or not.
Yeah, and I know you gave us that tip on Brandon Coleman way back in like March, and he's made some noise here, and that's a big body. You think Brandon Coleman, that big body, is going to be a factor helping to offset the loss of Jim Graham? And again, I like Colston this year. I think he's not getting the love. Look, I look at it like this. If it's third and goal at the six, Drew Brees looking for Colston. I mean, these guys have been together for a decade, Greg. So I like Colston this year, but your thoughts on Coleman?
Well, I think that they see him in that role as you know, a Jimmy Graham role, because he's a wide receiver, but he's probably too big. You know, well, I don't want to say too big. That's a pointless thing to say, but I mean, he's not a quick twitch kid, you know, for a wideout. You know, size is his attribute as a wideout. But I think you can use him as a movement guy, line him up in different spots. Clearly, he creates matchup issues at his size. So I could see him being that kind of guy. Because don't forget, they've still got Brandon Cooks now back healthy. You know, they still have Colston. You know, they've got weapons. They've got personnel. So Coleman becomes an intriguing sort of movable chess piece in their offense.
Kind of crazy to ask, but does Jimmy Graham still move better than Brandon Coleman?
I think he's a smoother athlete. I mean,
Yeah.
you know, Coleman's not a stiff, you know, we're not talking about, you know, like a blocking tight end, but I
Right.
think Graham just is a little smoother. But Coleman's, you know, he played wide receiver in college.
Yep. Oh, sure. In Tampa, it's the Doug Martin show thus far, and Charles Sims likely looking to kind of settle in as that complimentary guy. And Greg, how important is Doug Martin this year for the success of Jameis Winston? We know he's got those big weapons on the outside. The O-line's not very good, but I feel like it could all start with Doug Martin. If Doug Martin delivers, and I'm not expecting it fully, but if Doug Martin delivers, I think that's a huge plus for Jameis Winston.
I think Martin and the run game is critical, absolutely critical, because if Jameis Winston is put in too many long yardage situations behind that O line, and there will be a learning curve for Winston, and he's going to have to speed himself up a little bit, all these things will happen, but they'll take time, then it could be a real struggle early on. And because Winston is a turn it loose kind of quarterback, and I heard a very telling comment by Winston. I actually was watching ESPN when I was at the gym, believe it or not, and
Pumping
jaws
iron,
was
Greg?
down.
You're pumping
Yeah, you
iron?
know, that was, you know, I was benching about 450, John. You know how it is. But
Ah,
anyway, you know,
down from 480.
yeah, you know, I had an off day, but you know,
Yeah.
jaws was down there, and he asked Winston about, you know, sort of takeaways from camp. You know, what's the difference between college and the NFL? And I thought Winston had a really interesting answer. You know, you usually hear a lot of cliched statements, but he said, you know, the linebackers, man, he said, in the NFL, boy, these guys really get into coverage really fast. He said that doesn't happen in college. And see, Winston's used to turning those balls loose, and you know, it's just a different game. So it's going to be really interesting. I'm so fascinated to watch Winston and Mariota. You know, and again, for me, it becomes a regular season thing. You know, everybody's going to ask me my definitive takeaways after every snap, and I just have a tough time answering those questions that way. But I think it's fascinating.
Oh, Greg, I want next week on the podcast your snapshot, the career perspective of Winston and Mariota. I require that next week, Greg.
Sure, I'll give you my definitive judgment on their entire careers.
We'll just make it up and
Yeah.
deny it after that. All right, we'll move on to the West, and we can go to Arizona and John Brown. A lot of people are talking him up in the world of fantasy, and I get it. The kid was incredibly dynamic and made big plays and tracked that deep ball very, very well. The one thing that gives me some pause is they just don't really have a go-to guy. That's the way I look at it. I don't know what you think. And I think Brown's going to be a factor. The Michael Floyd injury certainly helps. But are you ready to say that John Brown is going to be basically T.Y. Hilton, a guy that's fully integrated and a big-time factor every single week?
I think they want him to become that guy, because I think with Michael Floyd's injury and Larry Fitzgerald probably at this point more of a possession guy, I think they'd like to find a guy who can be the complete guy. You know, ultimately Floyd has the talent to be that guy, but you know, he won't be on the field. So yeah, I mean, John Brown, he lined up all over last year. You know, they got him involved in multiple ways. I think they see him as that guy.
We'll see about Chris Johnson. I think that their interest in him is probably a lot more to do with David Johnson than it is Andre Ellington. Right. But and David Johnson has missed some time and all that. So we can move on to Seattle. Don't really have a ton here. San Fran, not a ton going on here as well. Vernon Davis, though, and any thoughts on him this year? There's been something of an edict handed down to get him the ball. He has done well with Kaepernick in the past, you know, but yet another strike on the Niners with the Alden Smith situation. I know it's the other side of the ball, but geez, Greg, have you ever seen an off season as ugly as this? You know, I kind of want to give the Niners a little bit of love because people are throwing them under the bus, but they keep taking all these hits.
Well, they're in a situation like, you know, that it just happened all at once, but now younger players that they've drafted or that they signed have to play. And every team is in that situation. They normally have a buffer when that happens. You know, look, Patrick Willis only played, I think, 8 games last year. You could make the argument that prior to being injured, Navarro Bowman was the best 3-4 inside linebacker in the NFL. He's back. You know, that's not being talked about. Clearly, yeah, a healthy Alden Smith in his right mind is a top 3 pass rusher in the league. That's a loss. But Aaron Lynch came on last year, a guy they drafted, and played very well in the last 5 or 6, 7 games. So, you know, again, it's there's a lot of, to me, it's not doom and gloom as much as it is wait and see.
Yeah, that's where I am too, because I was actually thinking they may be a little sneaky and under the radar because everyone seems to be so down on them. And we know what Kaepernick is. Although
we're
hearing that
you just hit it on the head. It comes back to him. If Colin Kaepernick had advanced last year to the point, John, where we were realistically discussing him as a top 10 quarterback, which he's not right now, we'd probably be having a different conversation about the 49ers, wouldn't we?
Yeah, and look, I actually think they have a chance with Kaepernick. Reportedly, his timing and his anticipation has improved a little bit. It's never going to be great. But just be decent, check it down a little bit more and all that. But Torrey Smith, you know, the vertical threat to take advantage of the big arm. You know, if it's a pass interference penalty or a reception, it's going to help. Vernon Davis fully integrated, getting the ball. Of course, Anquan Boldin as your possession guy. You don't have to be accurate to throw it to him. I mean, that's not bad, Greg, along with Carlos Hyde. You know, the O-line, too, is the other story because they've had some losses here. But
so again, they're counting on guys they've drafted, like Martin, the center, who's a third round pick. Brandon Thomas, who I really liked when he came out of Clemson and played tackle. He tore his ACL and couldn't play last year. He's back, and they're moving him inside to guard. So, you know, again, you're relying on guys you drafted. That's what teams do. It just seems like the 49ers are doing it all at once.
Yeah, yeah, and maybe not. It may be somewhat involuntarily, but
could still
work out for him, Greg. That's it. We did go 1 hour, a little bit longer than I thought, but it wasn't a huge broadcast. So we're all caught up. And this time next week, we'll have some game action to watch. And you watch all the tape in the preseason, right, Greg? I mean, how much tape do you watch?
I don't watch everything, John, you know, in the name of full disclosure, because it's hard.
Right. It's hard.
But, yeah, I mean, I watch, you know, I cherry pick because there's certain things I want to see. But I'm just going to be up front with you. Week one, I'll watch some, but I don't make definitive judgments on week one. I just, you know, and I know everybody wants to because people are dying for football games, but, you know, you got to be realistic here. I mean, you know, that's one thing I think people, you know, understand about me is I try to be pretty realistic about this, whether you agree or disagree with what I say. You know, so week one is not going to, you know, be final judgments on what a player is or what a team is.
Yeah, I'll watch all the games, maybe a couple of them twice in the background while I'm working all week and all that. And I'll put it together as my as a 3-week snapshot of what I've seen over the course of the 3 weeks of the preseason, not including week four. And I do an article on the website called Good Vibes and Bad Vibes. And, you know, obviously I'm doing this for a living. I'm covering it all off season. I know, you know, as much as I need to know, watch all the games. And then people love this article at the end of the year, at the end of the preseason, like I go team by team. All right, here are the vibes I'm getting here. And it's actually been pretty accurate in terms of previewing the season, Greg, but we're just getting started with it. We appreciate your time as always. That's going to wrap it up for Greg Cosell. I'm John Hanna. Again, check out fantasyguru.com, and we'll talk to you next time.